all kinds of things are going on right now. President Trump was supposed to be going to his son's wedding. He was supposed to be going to Florida. And then dramatic scenes where the motorcade is seen rushing back to the Capitol, into the White House. And everybody's like, man, the war's going to start tonight. And then it's like, no, actually, it's not going to start. But there's still negotiations. President Trump wants to give more time for negotiations. And then there's this flurry of activity in the Middle East. All of this stuff going on just in the last few hours. Now, forget about the last 24 hours or overnight. Things are happening even this morning. Bottom line is, I think that a lot of claims and talks about negotiations are going on, but I don't believe any of it. I think a lot of people are talking, let me be clear, but I don't think that there's any actual negotiations going on. I think that people are talking past one another, left and right, and trying to hope against hope that the other side does what they want, but not actually any kind of negotiations. And to be clear, a negotiation means that you give something to get something. And right now, it looks like that neither side is willing to give very much. We're going to see some of the details of that as we go on. First of all, let's take a look at something President Trump said, which he's going to be talking kind of about Iran here, also in the context of Venezuela. But underneath, I want you to pay attention to the subtext here, because you're going to see this theme, unfortunately, running throughout this entire show here.
Hey, by the way, how did we do in Venezuela? Not bad. That's why is it? You know, we've taken out so much oil in Venezuela, we paid for the cost of the war about 25 times over. When did you hear that last? You know, it's a one-way street.
Yeah, it's a one-way street. Now, just on the surface of it, that who's going to want to listen to that? That you went into this country and stole their oil, and then you want to have negotiations with another country and think that they're going to believe you? But even more important than that, we have seen that there was about a 200 congressional bill that they wanted to pass to pay for all this war so far, 200 billion. That's what he said. I think that the average had been up the first few portions of the war, over $1 billion a day. I think 29 billion was what I heard, what it had physically cost up to that point. Of course, the clock is always ticking because of all these forces deployed. So you pick it, either 29 billion or 200 billion that we were asking Congress for, et cetera. But when you look at the energy chief, Wright, he said, this is back in February, up to that point, that the U.S. had gotten $1 billion from Venezuelan oil, and that he hoped to get $5 billion in the coming 3 months. So that was in February, March, April, May. So that would be around now. So if everything he said turned out to be true, and it usually isn't, but let's just give him the benefit of the doubt, that would be $6 billion, not 29, not 200, six. And that would imply that we are literally taking every dollar from the sale of Venezuelan oil and keeping it, and then applying it into the national treasury to pay off this war here. There's no evidence that that's happening either. In fact, what we've claimed is that we're in a cooperative deal and they get some proportion out of the gracious and the goodness of our heart. We allow them to keep some money from their own resource that we're otherwise stealing. I don't know how the numbers are working out. He hasn't provided any. But even what we do know, there is no truth to what he says. All the people in that room you saw, all the people in his audience are clapping and cheering. It was great. It was wonderful. We believe every word you say, but they don't matter. What they believe doesn't matter in terms of the war. Now, he will lie to them left and right, because the real target of President Trump's primary deception has always been his followers. The people who trust him the most are the ones being most deceived and undercut. That's just one of the cruel truths that will one day be manifest and will one day come to manifestation. He will pay for that. Because once his core supporters realize that they have been deceived all along, that they were being played fools by him, the person whom they gave all of this support, that will be an ugly day for President Trump. Because when it falls, it'll be like a cliff. They'll just fall off the edge and it'll never be recovered. We're not there yet, though. That's still on. Well, another odd one is from Marco Rubio. He was making some comments here, and listen to this at first. He's going to be talking here about something that we have to start doing.
We have to start thinking about, what do we do if a few weeks from now Iran decides we don't care, we're going to keep the straits closed, we're going to sink any ship that doesn't listen to us or doesn't pay us? Then someone's going to have to do something about it. Okay, they're not just going to voluntarily reopen the straits. Happening. I know there's a plan in place for what to do if the shooting stops, but we have to have a plan B for if someone is shooting. You know, how do you reopen the straits?
What are you talking about? This is May 23rd. This war started on the 28th of February. And today you want to start thinking about what happens if we can't open the Strait of Hormuz? I mean, what is anybody supposed to make out of that? When you have one of the top three positions in these two videos, you have the number one and at least the number three, possibly number two position in the United States of America, Secretary of State, President of the United States. And he is saying, we got to figure out a plan B. How can you possibly not have a plan B, C, and D at this point? You should have had at least a plan A, B, and C before the thing started, before you launched one missile, before you sent one ship into combat, before you launched one plane. All of that happens before one missile is fired. Or it should, if you have just the least amount of common sense and maturity. And one has to wonder, do we have that at any level in this government? And then here in the fourth month, the third or fourth month of this war, you have the Secretary of State saying, we've got to figure something out. And if they keep doing what they're doing, which they've been doing since day one, we got to have a plan B. So you're trying to figure out a plan B as you're trying to allegedly negotiate an end to this war. A lot of talk on the Western media, especially in X and several other social media platforms, that we were nearly there. We nearly had a deal. Everything was close. We're just trying to finalize things. Maybe it's going to be an end of war negotiation, and then that's going to set the stage for 30 days of debate, discussion over all the details. But it's going to be a full end of war, et cetera. There was no truth to that either. That was all a lie. That's like the seventh or eighth, maybe even the 10th time something like that has happened. I'll tell you for sure what that was. That was another attempt to manipulate markets, to make on a Friday, make the stock market go up and the price of oil go down. And both of those things happened. So somebody, according to reports that I've seen, again, made a lot of money. There was no truth to any of it. So look, you can't have an end-of-war negotiation by just sending notes back and forth through intermediaries. All of those things, which are going on, by the way, there are communications through intermediaries between the U.S. and Iran. But all of those things happen to set up the actual negotiations. You have to get to some level of where, all right, we're at least in the same zip code. Now then, let's meet together. You cannot get to an end of war negotiation unless you have the principal sitting right there, like the Secretary of State or vice presidential level, somebody at that level. We haven't even done that yet, so no one should believe any of that. But that's just the world we live in right now, where people are able to make billions of dollars, individuals who have hundreds of millions to put on these contracts, and then they're reaping in the billions. People claim that, oh, we're investigating this and that, but nothing ever happens, and the trades keep going on. Because I've said this before, and this is just another example, we're basically a country that's no longer governed by the rule of law. And so whether it's international law, whether it's the Constitution or financial law like this, no one cares, because all the instruments of power are in the hands of the guy and his very closest friends who benefit from it. They're not going to investigate themselves. So that's what we have. Now, that's stuff domestically we've got to worry about. But how does that affect what's going on internationally? Let me just show you a couple of things here. Just from last night and this morning here, Field Marshal from Pakistan, Azmir Munir, met with Araghchi, the foreign minister from Iran, yesterday. And this meeting continued until late into the night. The two sides exchanged views on the latest diplomatic efforts and initiatives to prevent the escalation of tensions and end the war imposed by the United States and Israel in Iran. And then this morning, we had another, Iran's chief negotiator, Ghalibaf, has met with the Pakistani army chief, Munir, again, according to state media. So they're putting this out. So they're talking quite a bit there. After this conversation, Ghalibaf warns Trump, we will not compromise on the rights of our nation and country, especially with a party that has no honesty at all and cannot be trusted. There's that word again. Our armed forces have rebuilt themselves during the ceasefire. If Trump foolishly restarts the war, they will definitely be more crushing and bitter for the United States than on the first day of the war. Now, there have been other reports here in the last couple of days to where the Iranian side has said, listen, we're not only going to go back to what we did before. And we've now seen validated by Western media that the missiles and drones fired by the Iranian side were, in many cases, pinpoint accurate. However many were actually intercepted and knocked down is a subject of debate. But what is not subject of debate is that whatever that percentage is that got through was on target and at the critical target. So we already know that they can hit stuff that they shoot at, and it can be really harsh in its results for us, costly for us. Now they're saying that if we go back to it, they're going to expand the target list, not just in the GCC, but they say expand it beyond the Middle East. And it's up to anybody's interpretation of what that means, because they weren't very specific on it. They intentionally weren't specific. So they're saying, listen, we're going to hit other countries. We're going to hit other targets in the same countries. And they've had a lot of time to come up with a new target list, and things that they didn't attack the first time, they can hit the second thing. See, our problem is that if we want to go back and restart the war, that's, there's only one set of targets that we need to go after that we didn't get the first time. Those are buried in a mountain. So when we had the best of our long-range missiles, especially the ATACMs, the JASMs, and the Tomahawk cruise missiles, and some of these bunker busters too, they had limited effect on some of these underground missile cities. Most had no effect at all. Just hitting granite mountainsides, rattling the rafters, knocking some dust off some of the light fixtures inside, no doubt. But that's it. If we return, all we can do is fire the same munitions against the same target, then we'll have the same outcome. So we don't have anywhere to ratchet up to, unless President Trump is thinking about using nuclear weapons, and that's a whole other conversation that we'll have. Even that, though, would not destroy Iran, because these underground bunkers are designed to survive nuclear blasts. So it's that, too. But the other side, Iran does have lots of room to expand their target list and can bring profoundly more pain to us. There's also the issues of these underwater internet cables that are running under the Strait of Hormuz, which just devastate global economy, especially in that region. It would just be absolutely devastating, and it would take years probably to recover and to repair all that stuff. They're saying all that's at risk too if we attack. So they have a lot more military cards they could play if we go back to war. We can only play the same hand that didn't work the first time, folks. It would be absurd to the highest degree to go back and try to do what didn't work the first time. It is a hardcore issue. The mountains can't be penetrated with our weapons, and that's where they have their long-range missiles and their drone factories. Everything that they need to continue to execute on all these things that are going on here. And of course, our blockade is causing significant damage inside of Iran. It's causing significant hardship on their population. Unemployment is going through the roof. Their currency has been devalued because of our efforts out there. So they are definitely suffering, and it's not minor, and it's not insignificant. But it's something that they can survive and they can endure for a long time. And they are calculating that they can endure that longer than we can. Because all of our issues, while President Trump's statements and others leaked information did drive the price of oil down, the strategic petroleum reserves and all these other storage tanks are getting close to running dry, or they don't have it. And then there will be a physical shortage of supply, and you just can't do economic activity if you don't physically have the oil. And we're getting close to that. And I think the Iran side is calculating, hey, dude, you want to go down that path? You want to play chicken? We can play it because we can suffer more than you do. Now, there is some information out here on DropSite News this morning that talks about what the Iranian side are willing to talk about, because they are willing to talk. There's a reason why all these things that they're talking about with Pakistan to try and have a negotiation, they actually have some terms. But let's take a look at what they are. This is what's being reported so far today. The Iranian side, their proposal, what they're talking to Pakistan about, is two tracks. Number one, end the war first. Iran wants a formal declaration ending the war, an end to the U.S. naval blockade on Iranian ports, and the release of frozen Iranian assets before broader nuclear negotiations began. In exchange, Iran would provisionally reopen the Strait of Hormuz, waive transit fees temporarily, and allow maritime traffic to resume while a new governance of regime for Hormuz is actually finalized. Iran is also demanding a compensation mechanism funded by the U.S. and other countries involved in the attacks on Iran to pay damages inside Iran, along with the end to Israeli attacks in Lebanon. Almost all of that right there is all poison pills. This is what Iran actually wants, what they said they would be willing to end the war if all these things happen. That's just track one. And there's so many things in there. I mean, the first, a formal declaration ending the war, and that the U.S. would have to end its blockade and then release frozen Iranian assets. And of course, for many in the United States, and you're going to see this in a second, That one pill right there is the most poison, because that's what they dogged the Obama administration for, unfreezing Iranian assets. And they always characterized it as giving plane loads of cash to Iran. You didn't give them anything. You just released what was already theirs. But that's track one. Then you get down here to track two. It says nuclear negotiations after the war ends, or after the war ends. That's when we would start nuclear negotiations. Then they would suspend enrichment above 3.6 for 10 years. Dilute uranium enriched above 20% under supervision inside Iran, commit not to develop a nuclear weapon, which they have. That's easy for them. It's a throwaway. That's what they've always said since 2003. Now, these are also poison pills, because this says we will retain the ability to enrich. And even that will have a 10-year sunset, which, of course, was one of the things that the Trump administration complained so bitterly about the Obama nuclear deal. Is that it had a 10-year sunset. So that's also a poison pill. And in return, Iran wants, like, that wasn't bad enough, recognition of its right to enrich, limited enrichment rights preserved under a future agreement, and full sanctions relief. Other than that, it's a great deal. So that's what the Iranian side is wishing. So when I said at the top of this show here that I think that all the conditions, when you look at what's happening, it's almost the only path left. The only path left to the Trump is, there are two. There's still, even with all of that, there are two. One is the one that I will continue to advocate until bombs start dropping again. That's the walk away plan. Just walk away. Claim victory, say all this damage that Trump loves to just rattle off, all these things that have happened and things that have been blown up, people killed, airplanes, ships, all that stuff. Just say, yep, and Operation Midnight Hammer, you can throw that in there as another feather in your cap. We've walked away with this. We've blown it up. Take them 2 decades to reply, and if they ever do anything more, we'll come back in and bomb them again. Whatever. Say whatever you want to say. That's one possibility. The other one is the bombs away. That's it, folks. It's walk away or bombs away. There's no other option. This is why I've told you over and over again, there is no diplomatic path forward here, because you see, this is what the Iranian side is saying. I actually had a communication this morning with Professor Mirandi. Let me see if he replied to my last one here. And I asked him, I said, is Iran willing to be talking back on anything? Are they willing to be flexible anywhere? And he said, Iranians are in a stronger position now than Trump. So they're in no rush to make a deal. Trump's people are showing some flexibility, but not nearly enough so far. Iran believes that if there is war, it has the upper hand. And if there's a stalemate, it can wait out longer than the U.S. Iran will not relinquish any of the 10 points that it said earlier, which is the version of what we just showed you there. It could be flexible on some issues, for example, how to collect fees at the Strait of Hormuz without having to publicize, et cetera. So he's saying, look, this is the Iranian position. What Dropside News was talking about there, that is Professor Mirandi just minutes before we came on air here. That's what he's saying. So if that's the Iran negotiating position, let me show you what the view is from the United States side on any of those poison pills I just showed you. This is Mark Dubowitz from Foundation of Defensive Democracies, the very hawkish and anti-Iranian organization here in the United States. He says this proposal is a bad joke. No serious American president, especially President Trump, would accept a deal that makes the JCPOA look brilliant by comparison. The regime has never been weaker, yet its arrogance is exceeded only by its grasp of reality. One may wonder who he was talking about on that last phrase, because you talk about somebody that whose arrogance is only exceeded by its lack of grasp on reality. You might need to be looking in the mirror on that one, friend. And to his other comment there about the JCPOA, this deal would make the JCPOA look brilliant by comparison. And on that narrow point, I agree with him, because the deal we had with the JCPOA was brilliant in comparison, because it capped it out at 3.67%. It capped out how much they could reprocess, what they could do with that reprocessed material. They got rid of, I think, hundreds of pounds of the stuff that they had prior to that. They had very intensive, intrusive inspections so we could validate all these things. And when they were found to be out of compliance, we put pressure. They came back into compliance. All those things. They declared they didn't want a nuclear weapon. It was perfect. It was brilliant. It would have prevented them from ever getting a nuclear weapon. And with even with the sunset clauses, just understand, if we had done on our part what we had promised, and the Iranian side had continued doing what it said, and through that full 10-year period of time, instead of Trump getting out in 2018, then by the time the 2025 end date had come up and the time to renegotiate, it would have been renegotiated. There is no way, it almost impossible, that Iran would have said, you know what, we're just going to get out of this deal. We're going to let these sunset clauses go off and we're going to go begin. Because that would have immediately, because of the provisions of the JCPOA, would have referred snapback as sanctions, and everything would have been thrown on them. So all these sanctions that they would have gotten used to living without and doing commerce and having a good economy, those things would have been all thrown back out the window, and they would have destroyed everything. Ergo, they wouldn't have, because they would have had significant motivation to continue to comply with it. That's what the likes of Mark Dubowitz, Lindsey Graham, Jack Keane, Keith Kellogg, Donald Trump, none of those people ever want to admit to. In fact, Donald Trump lies flat out. There's no other word to use. I'm sorry if for those whose feelings that may hurt. When he says that was the JCPOA was a pathway to a bomb, that is absurd in the highest degree. It's a lie on face value. It would have prevented it. And now then, because we pulled out, and because of these two wars we've done in the span of less than a year, we're in a position now where the best that we could hope for is a negotiated settlement that would be a capitulation to Iran. And there's no other way to put that, too. We have to be honest. There's just no way to put it. That's what a negotiated end would look like. It would be a surrender to Iran. And that's what those terms are for. And that's why I say there's no way Trump will do that. You can't put a good face on that one. Just walking away and not agreeing to any of their terms is the only other alternative. So if he's not going to be a negotiated settlement, if he's not going to do the walkaway three, just claim success, then the only thing left is to restart combat operations.
You know, we don't have sponsors because we hate to hit you over the head with ads. I don't like them. So show a little love back. Subscribe, like, and send this to somebody you care about.